This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Second hour of the program. It's Jonathan Von Tobel filling in for Patrick Maher today. And look who shows up. We got him for the next 30 minutes. Mike Palm, you see him all over the place. Host a live bet Saturday on Lombardi Lines on Fridays. Yes, there we go. See, I memorized it all. What's up, man?
Fridays, yes. Welcome to Bar Canada. Welcome. I know you guys have come here as civilians many times in the past to enjoy watching and betting the games. And welcome for this being your home and for filling in for PM this week.
Dude. Yeah. Yeah, it's great to have JBT on with us, but I'll tell you what, the name is kind of inappropriate. Bar Canada, it's hot as hell here.
So, but we're going to work on it. Maybe these lights can be adjusted. Maybe there's not as much heat here. Maybe we can get another air handler over in this section. Saturday afternoon with Ben Wilson was pretty toasty up here. I think I lost about 8.5 pounds.
Good for you. Good for you. I've got to tell you.
Playing goalie, huh?
I've been here as a civilian, you're right, but I had never. I'm going to give him a pop for a third straight day. I had never had a Labatt Blue before I did the shows here. Oh, bro, that is a good beer.
It's a terrific beer. There's a wide variety of beers here as well. Mitch likes this Italian beer that they have up here when he comes. The name of it offhand.
Stella, is it?
No. Oh, okay. It's some Italian beer. This Cronenberg I've been introduced to up here. Have you ever had it, Cronenberg? Very good as well. So it's a good variety of beers up here. And it's actually, if you want to hear the games, and Amal can attest to this, if you want to hear the games, it's the best place at our property to be. You know, the sports book is very, very loud, but if you want to hear the play-by-play, the main game, a lot of people choose here, like for March Madness, over the ballroom just because they can hear the sound more clearly.
Test that out tomorrow.
Can't wait. Looking forward to that. We're going to watch the KC game here. I'll tell you what, I just remembered when the three of us last time we got together here at the D at the ballroom, we were watching March Madness. It was Ja Morant and Murray State taking on Florida State.
I remember
these five dolts came in and bet Florida and bet Murray State. And I said to Mike, I should go put more money on Florida State. I already unloaded the clip on them.
Wow.
I was like, I remember those guys, they were down 25 about 10 minutes into the game.
Unlocked the memory. I was on Murray State in that one too. And it was one of those where you hear somebody cheering, so you kind of get more aggressive with your cheering because you're like, come on, let's go.
I told Mike, I said, don't worry about it. I said, this guy, I said, I like JBT, but he's on the dead wrong side here.
Who knew Ja was packing back then?
pretty high probability. All right, so let's talk about contest first. How's it shaping up? I know that the overlay for, Survivor has been getting closer and closer.
Yeah, so these are the numbers as of 1 o'clock, just a few minutes ago, Pacific time. Survivor up to 74.52. I mean, there's an outside shot. We hit the 8,000 tomorrow on Thursday. I don't think we can get there in the millions. I mean, we were 1,400 short last year, the 6 million. We came back with the same guarantee. We're at 42.68. I think we'd be lucky to get to 5,500. Here's the breakdown today. There's been 322 between all our Nevada properties today, 229 survivors, 93 in the millions, Amal.
There's one right there.
Well, I'm going to cut into your number here shortly. I think you're going to get
millions.
There.
You're going to do some millions or some survivors?
Going to do both.
What's your break then? You did the full house, 15, 10, and 5 them all?
No, here's the funny thing on Survivor. I don't really understand why people do a ton of entries, like beyond a couple to a few, because after a while you start to have carnage. Remember one thing. You've got to make 20 picks in Survivor throughout the entirety of the season. So you are actually utilizing 63% of the teams. You don't want to be in a situation where, okay, if you use team A here and then all of a sudden another time, you're almost – guaranteeing that certain entries are going to be going by the wayside.
Somebody asked me that question. They said, isn't 5 or 6 really the optimal number of plays and not 10?
Yes, absolutely.
To get the Survivor?
They're correct.
I can see arguments both ways. You know, I did my panel, the preview panel up here a couple Saturdays ago with Wes Reynolds, Mike Somich, Dr. Eric Eager, and then Dylan Sullivan, who's our chief NFL market maker here at Circa Sports. And the audience provided a lot of the questions. There were a lot of Survivor-based questions, and they asked them to rank the importance of criteria when they make a Survivor selection. And they threw in home team, and they threw in divisional as part of it. The panel to a man said it's more important to choose non-divisional games than to choose home teams. I know you try to do both of them all. Stay away from road teams and stay away from divisional games.
Yeah, absolutely. Division opponents have a lot more familiarity. On the road, we see teams. You look at every sport. Look at baseball, a perfect example, JVT. You see the pricing of a team at home compared to on the road.
Right.
Completely different. And I think the value is still there, even though the home field advantage is, JVT, you alluded to earlier in the show, you thought about a 1.8 points in terms of home field advantage. To me, it still has some value there in terms of it, but got another strategy that I employ, and it's an important one for me in terms of how I do it. Not going to share it, but the reality of it is, no, listen,
here's
the thing. Oh, we got $8 million at stake. If you want to give me $8 million, I'm willing to share everything with you.
If that's what your salary was. I assume that you'd be fine.
Dude, you'd be lucky if I get 8 shekels. I mean, the bottom line is, look, the key – people are talking like, – let's use week one, for example, guys. Mm-hmm. I know I'm putting you on the spot, JBT. I don't know how much you've thought about it. But if you look at week one, Mike, who would you pick and who would you pick?
Here's the problem. I said this 6 weeks ago that I thought the Commanders would be
– number one.
A chic pick. But now they're going to be like more than 50% of the entries, I think. And it's at a point where – I don't know if you want to be – at least you don't want all your entries to be the consensus pick, right? I just – when else are you going to use them? And this should be the Daniel Snyder lift game. That crowd should be finally a partisan crowd. This is a team they should pummel. We've seen what's going on in Arizona, right? I don't think people will use Baltimore because I think you want to save Baltimore. Maybe some people will go in the Vikings. Maybe they're going to split their entries between Commanders and Vikings. I think that's the most probable – a ratio that you'll get.
My thought was at the top of the list was Minnesota and then Baltimore. Those are the top two.
You wouldn't consider doing the Commanders.
No, I'm not big on Howell. I think there's a much larger probability than people expect that Howell goes out there, lays an egg, and you're talking about like a one possession game that you've got to sweat out for the Commanders.
I agree with this assertion on Washington. However, with that being said, I will take Washington in week one.
Will you throw all of your picks behind one team in week one?
Absolutely. I'm not worried about that.
Are you going to try to get through 4 or 5 weeks?
Call me in week 12.
Are you going to try to get to Thanksgiving? But you're going to split your picks at some point before Thanksgiving, I would.
Probably not.
No, you don't think so?
No, I don't understand this notion that you're going to split them up. What is the point of trying to have just, oh, great, I got one entry to week 12? I want to try and have as many as I can. So that way when you wind up in those weeks like the Chargers versus the Dolphins, which I think is a complete coin toss game, you could go either way. You know, the argument as well is so many people are on the Commanders that they lose. But here's the problem. You don't win the contest if the Commanders lose. You just eliminate a bunch of people. Mm-hmm. Part of the problem is I think people look at too much that they're playing against other people. You are not. You are facing yourself in the schedule. That's more important than what other people are doing.
It makes sense. I would also say one of the teams that I would strongly consider before the injury to Kelce was Kansas City. I'm not really big on the Detroit Lions. I think there's a lot more volatility there because the total and there's a chance without Jones. That's something there. But the Chiefs were not near the top, but they were one of the ones under consideration.
I like that pick. I don't think a lot of people are going to take the Chiefs.
Right.
But I agree.
You know, there's the angle you can re-enter if you blow the pick, right?
Well, and I would assume, by the way, going back to the numbers, you're probably going to get up to 8,000 on the people who buy back in after Thursday night, right?
That's now, we only had 36 last year that did that.
Okay.
That made a pick that made, I think there was like 90 and 36 of them had the Rams and then bought back in, right?
It's actually not a bad call by you. Here's what you really should do. Do we have the money line price up on Detroit here in this game?
Give it to you in a sec.
Yeah, and what you do is, and you could lose in case of a tie, but what are the odds of a tie occurring?
We used to put that prop up. Will there be a tie at the end of Survivor?
Plus
the greatest thing that ever happened.
Yeah, plus 180, plus 190, depending on where you get the number. You bet $525 on the other side. You cover the entry cost if the Lions win the game. Right? Then you can come back and re-enter. It's actually a free play in essence, but the only thing is now you don't have the Kansas City Chiefs available, which is a team you're probably going to want to have as the season progresses.
Makes sense. Look at you. You're smart.
I tell you one thing. Listen, we have great and intelligent people at our network, but when it comes to hedging, I will put all my ducks on Mike Palm and I. Nobody hedges more than Mike and I.
Monetizing.
Monetizing.
Hedge is a dirty word in this business.
Oh, God.
It does so. I mean, we've been attacked.
I can tell you this. The guy who owns the Mets, his guy got busted for insider trading for hedging on a stock where they were not going to get FDA approval on a drug. And that's why the guy ended up doing 7 years.
I was on with Mitch and Paul a couple weeks ago, and Brad – or I was filling in for Mitch, and Brad Powers was the guest a couple Thursdays ago. And we were talking about Hawaii, Stanford. And he had gotten Hawaii plus 10 or 10 and whatever the number was.
Yep.
And at the time, it was 3.5. And he says, you know, if this number gets to 3 – Stanford's the correct play. So the question was, well, if it gets to three, what portion of the bet that you made on Hawaii at 10 are you going to make on Stanford? He said, I don't think I'm going to make any because I'm so happy with the seven points of closing line value. But if that's the proper bet to make, I'll take that middle surrounding three key numbers all the time. That's just my philosophy, right?
Well, no, hold on a second. It contradicts what everybody says on this network. Everyone goes closing line value. Well, if there's so much closing line value at seven, then why would you not, let's say for simple math, you put $110 on Hawaii and then you put $110 on Stanford. So in essence, you're betting $10 to win $200. Mm. That would be the prudent play every day of the week and twice on Sundays.
20 to 1 on 3 through 10.
On 3 through 10, if you're telling me that the odds makers are so perfect at what they do.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. I mean, I think the closing line value discussion is over the large sample. We know how that goes.
Sure.
But when it comes to that unique scenario, it would make a lot more sense.
And it actually got to 2.5.
Right. That's well, that's amazing. The other part. I mean, once you get to 2.5, I think if you're in somebody like Brad's position, there's no way you pass up not laying 2.5.
But by the way, I really respect – I mean, sure. Yeah. I might respect him more than anybody on college
football. Tremendous. Yeah. He's absolutely tremendous. But Johnny Avello and I have talked about this. There's a fear factor with people in terms of a line move, particularly in college football, that is completely unnecessary. You know, we were sitting there talking about before we came on the air right now, we're talking about the Florida State LSU game, the game getting to three. And so my question to everybody always is, are you betting this game with the idea that Florida State's going to lose by one or two and you're hoping for the push on three?
Right.
I mean, like, if you're that concerned about this matchup, then don't bet the game.
The general thought would be if you're betting an underdog, you expect them to win at a higher probability. Yeah,
you would have looked at the money line. I mean, you were convinced Florida State was going to win the game. You didn't worry about the point spread.
I said the wrong team is favored. I said Florida State's going 12-0. They all looked at me like I was crazy. I said the Seminoles had 94% production back. Our prop bets. I said Florida State on their alternate win total, they're going to win the ACC. They're the best team in that conference. I've said it all summer long. When you look at returning production in college football, they were number one at 94%.
Amal's going to stay here. Calm down. Take a break. All right.
Just get fired up with college football.
All right, we'll come back. We'll hit the week one schedule as well, of course, because you do have an injury that has made the market go a little haywire. Mike's going to stick around as well. Sharp Money here on VSiN.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Get rewarded before you ever place a bet with the GBank Visa Signature Card. Unlike other credit cards that decline sports betting transactions or treat them as a cash advance, the GBank Visa Signature Card can load directly to your favorite sportsbook apps. You'll earn a 1% cash rewards on gaming and sports apps loads every time and 2% on other purchases. GBank Visa is a card designed for gaming and sports fans everywhere and works with apps like DraftKings, BetMGM, and Caesars. To learn more, go to g.bank/vsin. That's g.bank/vsin. Speaking of G's, we've got one right here. Mike Palm is at the set. Amal Shaw alongside as well. So we were talking about some football. Football's here. Travis Kelce, injury. Market kind of freaks out, gets to as low as four. I don't think you guys got the four. You guys got the 4.5.
4.5.
I think, look, I bet 4.5. There's indications that he might play. He's listed as questionable officially here. I'm also very anti-Lion. I don't know how you feel about that. But where do you expect us to go with this questionable tag? And how low does it get if he plays? And where do we go back to? Or if he doesn't play, where do we go back to if he does play?
Well, I don't understand how a position player
can
be worth more than a point. It just doesn't make sense to me.
Market says he's worth 2.5 points.
Bull. That's bull to me. And the only guy that I would argue outside of a quarterback would be Justin Tucker. And he's a one-off.
Yeah.
I think Justin Tucker's worth more than 1 point to a line. Let's say it's, you know, Bengals at Ravens, and it's a tightly lined game, and he's announced out on Sunday morning.
That's a good point.
I think that moves more than a point. I don't think Kelce should move it more than a point. I'm going to admit that I had the same bias as you. I like the Chiefs going into this game. I like them without Kelce at 4.5 or 5. And does it get back to 6? I don't know if it gets back to 6 because before the injury news, we were still heavy to Lions money.
Right.
And we're a little bit biased, but they're not here yet in town, right? They're coming to town today and tomorrow. You know, if it's announced he's fully out, maybe it can get – I don't think it goes to 4. I think 4.5 is the lowest you're going to find out at game time.
Two separate questions. Which game are you most looking forward to seeing on Sunday from a competitive standpoint? And which one would you look at as a potential best bet?
I think I'm most looking forward to Bengals-Browns.
Oh, really? I wasn't expecting you to say that.
Well, because I think that division has the best storyline, because you could make an argument that all four of these teams are playoff teams. That can't be possible.
Mm-hmm.
You could argue that four teams in the East. There's going to be disappointed teams in the East and in the North, right? I mean, there has to be because there can only be seven. I'm not big on the Chargers. I know a lot of people think they're a playoff team. I don't think so. I think the South and the West only get one bid. But that means you get three wild cards, and you're talking about getting five or six out of those divisions. There are going to be some disappointed teams. If Deshaun Watson has got to really be done with his career, for the Browns not to make the playoffs, this is a 10-win team, basement level. They have, I think, inarguably the best combo of offensive and defensive lines in football. You can argue the best running back. They've added more explosiveness at tight end. Their secondary is all 1 and 2 picks, first-round picks in the draft. I mean, if Stefanski doesn't win 10 games this year, then 3 years removed from being coach of the year, he's going to be fired, I believe.
I bet him to win the division. From a probability standpoint, I think it's higher that they win it. And I would agree with you. If you get halfway to 2020, 2019 Deshaun Watson, like that team's going to be – I keep using the term fly in the ointment. Like, we could look up and they win that division. Like, they have the potential to do it.
Well, I disagree with your assertion that they have the potential. You're saying it like it's almost like, well, they could if things break right. I think this team is just not getting enough credit.
Well,
they've got the best offensive line for my money. You mentioned Chubb. You know, I'm not as big of a Deshaun Watson guy as you guys probably are, but I look back at the statistics. This guy has been an elite quarterback.
Oh, yeah. I just bring it up because there is a reality in which, for whatever reason, that year off for Watson and the time spent off in the suspension as well.
Yeah.
If he is just terrible, then if he's just lost it for whatever reason, then that's what happens when you get to the negative end of the spectrum for him.
The six games last year are absolutely meaningless to me.
Yes.
It doesn't matter. But the
you
fact
mean coming on as a quarterback in the Midwest and playing some of those games outside, is that a really true representation of how you can play?
I mean, you look at this line, Jedrick Wills, Joel Bitonio, Wyatt Teller, Jack Conklin. I mean, this is a very, very good offensive line. By the way, I don't know, maybe because Nick Chubb is a quiet guy. People don't talk about him because he's in Cleveland. This guy is 3 yards from having over 1,000 yards in every year of his career in the National Football League. He is tremendous. He's durable. He's got a great yards per carry average. He is just so incredibly effective. The question for me is, can their receivers be consistent? Can Donovan Peoples-Jones and Elijah Moore complement Amari Cooper? I think Amari Cooper has now slid down to a 2. At one point, he was a 1. But I still think they're good enough when you look at this team. And Njoku's got some great athleticism. You mentioned the defensive side of the ball. When you look at – now, Denzel Ward has generally only played 12 to 13 games in a season. If he can stay healthy, people don't realize how good of a cover corner he is.
Then on the best bet side of your question,
yeah.
Mal, I like the Packers at Soldier Field.
John Von Model loves them.
I think this Bears team is awful.
Yeah.
I bet the Bears about every way you could in a negative sense.
Yeah.
I bet under 7.5 plus 120. I bet under 6.5 plus 235. I mean, I know they're going to play a lot of close games. But they have a bad offensive line, a bad defensive line, and a quarterback that you've been talking about since the national championship game is not an accurate quarterback. And I'm not sold on this coach as a genius either.
Mm-hmm. Forget the coaching genius. I'm going to tell you, JBT, you go back to a play. It was 21-14. Ohio State had the ball inside the goal line. Garrett Wilson embarrassed Patrick Surtain on a move, and he threw the ball from Dade County to Broward County. And, I mean, I was like, right then and there, I said to Mike, I go, Mike, this guy will never be an accurate passer in the National Football League. You could just see it. I mean, he only had to throw the ball within 5 yards of Garrett Wilson, and he completely overthrew him. And I know it's one throw, and you're making a big deal out of nothing. But to me, the one thing Fields has lacked is accuracy. At Ohio State, the problem is you're playing with first-round picks and guys that are 5 yards open on every play.
So you kind of answered my question, so I'll take the three teams. I was going to ask you, of the three teams that are receiving a lot of hype, Chicago's one of them, what don't you get? So I'll take them out of it. Atlanta and Detroit are there as well.
Yep.
I can't wrap my head around it. We kind of talked a little bit about Detroit. I kind of get there with Atlanta in that I love their skill positions. Their offensive line's good. But when you have a question of the most important position, I just can't get all the way there.
I said to Michael Lombardi that the biggest head scratcher of the offseason is they didn't go out and get a quarterback.
Yeah.
I mean, they could have. They're going all in with Ritter. I don't know what this kid has proved. They have a team around him to be a playoff team. By the way, I don't hate him in week one because I just think it's so hard for a rookie quarterback to win their first start. And he should be the favorite for offensive player of the year, not a running back.
Mm.
It doesn't make sense that a running back in a backfield where other guys are going to get touches is a favorite for offensive rookie of the year. You know Young's going to get the start if he doesn't get hurt. They're going to let him play through and play 17 games. So anyhow, on that aside, you know, the Lions have sort of done it the right way. They built the line. I like Dan Campbell. I think he will improve as a game manager. But I'm just have seen this Lions so many times before. They sort of have to. It's like Missouri. You have to show me with the Lions.
Yeah.
I bet the Packers to win the division. just because I think that organization believes in Love. They were comfortable enough to not be a big fight. They didn't get a lot for Rodgers. I mean, they think they can. I kind of compare it. Will everybody else get to perform a little better with Rodgers gone? And I look at from a soccer example, I mean, they're totally different games, but I look at Tottenham right now and Harry Kane. I mean, Harry Kane losing was addition by subtraction so far for them. Everybody else is playing the best they've ever played. They were also subservient to him while he was there.
It's a great point you make, and I think that same thing applies with Aaron Rodgers when you look at the Green Bay Packers. And real quick, number one picks going back to 2002, David Carr was the last one to win. Yeah, exactly. Straight up 0-13-1. Kyler Murray had a tie in 27-27 in 2019, and 1-13 ATS. JBT, it lends itself to looking at Atlanta. I agree with you guys. The one thing when I looked at Desmond Ridder, I said, this guy's been the best bounce passer at Cincinnati since Nick Van Exel. I mean, he was terrible. I didn't understand the affinity for him. I thought Ford was a tremendous tailback. They had other guys that were good pieces there. I just didn't like him. I think that's the one missing piece in Arthur Smith's offense. I love Bijan Robinson. Nobody's a bigger Bijan fan than me, but I think Atlanta's big problem, and JBT, you hit the three teams right on the head. Atlanta,
Detroit, and Chicago
have all gotten the hype this year, and is it really warranted and justified? JBT made a couple of great points. I know it's rare for you to hear that, but the reality of it is, I was being facetious because earlier he goes, I always make great points. The thing is, the Bears' offensive line is question marks. Just because you drafted the kid out of Tennessee, that's one piece. Then you look at the team defensively, they were horrific. Detroit was horrific. And I said one other thing, Mike. I want to get your take on this. 1-6 last year. They end up 9-8, which they played well down the stretch. But you're playing with house money now because you're already in a losing situation.
I want to say this about the Bears. You know that in their last 10 games, they only scored more than 7 points in the second half once?
Yeah.
I mean, they were just totally destroyed in the second half of all those games, and of course closed. They weren't competitive at all. Yep. They're so far. The offensive line gave up the most sacks. They had the fourth fewest sacks. I mean, they're so far from being decent that I don't understand a 5-6 win improvement.
How many sacks would they have given up if Fields didn't have that type of mobility?
Right. Well, and he invited a ton of pressure himself anyway, and the turnover-worthy plays are insane. He puts the ball in danger. And at the end of my argument is just this. You know, when you talk about Detroit, when you talk about when you are – the worst at something, you can only advance so far from the bottom, and that's for both of those teams defensively. Like, I just don't know how you make that leap as a team. And specifically, like, when you're talking about winning divisions, we talk about worst to first. When you go from worst to first, generally you're a team that was around 500 then leaps up to the top of the division.
The only team that ever did it was the Cowboys under Jimmy Johnson. They went from 1 win to 7-11 with the greatest roster of all time. So I mean,
well, the Rams went from I think 4-12 or 3-13 to the Super Bowl next year. Right, the greatest show on turf with Kurt Warner. But, you know, the Bears to get to 8 wins, guys, from being the having the first pick in the draft, where has this talent come in all of a sudden?
Mike, it's good to talk to you. Live Bet Saturday, of course, you're going to be there for 4 hours. So looking forward to that. Good set here. Thanks for coming on, man.
Thank you, fellas.
Right, thank you.
Take our break. Come back. Sharp Money, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Updated NFL betting guide. You need it. Throughout the NFL preseason, the VSiN experts have been reevaluating every team to give you the betting edge. Inside, we get picks from every on-air host, team-specific preseason analysis, and football contest strategies. We talked in depth about that with Mike Palm. If you missed that, by the way, VSiN.com. If you want the best bets and most comprehensive collection of picks, predictions, previews, pontification, now is the time. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber for as low as $19. Sign up today at VSiN.com/subscribe. All right, let's get a little bit more information as to what's going to happen on Thursday night. And get some information maybe on what is going to happen with Travis Kelce. Jesse Newell is nice enough to give us some time here today. Kansas City Star Chiefs beat reporter Jesse Newell up on X. Jesse, thank you very much. So let's start with this, just a brief update. We know he's listed as questionable. Any news that you can report or any updates that we might not know about Travis Kelce's status?
No, I mean, I think it's basically been out there with him, which is obviously swung in the knee. They're going to see how it goes tomorrow. It would make the most sense to send him out and seem like the Chiefs dodged a bullet for him having a long-term injury. But send him out for the first game and have him ready for Jacksonville week two. But we know how they are. Sometimes guys can be competitors, especially with the season opener. So it seems like the Chiefs are going to test this tomorrow, and we'll have more information then. But as of right now, you guys have seen the betting lines. I mean, all indications are right now, it seems like Travis Kelce is going to be out, and I think that's the way most people are anticipating this thing's going to go.
Jesse, when you look at the Chris Jones situation, tell me where you think this contract could potentially land, and if it gets done, when would it potentially get done?
Yeah, that's what we're wondering. It was kind of a weird day today. I thought I was going to stay at home for most of the day, and Chris Jones, they announced a celebrity event, or I'm sorry, a charity event for him at Ronald McDonald's house here in Kansas City. So drove up here, and he spoke to reporters and had a story come up about that, and he basically just said, hey, I'm trying to get a raise, and I don't think other teammates should be mad at me. You know, it doesn't really bother me to be away, but I'm trying to get more money, and if you're asking your boss for a raise, it doesn't really affect the rest of them, and we can see how that doesn't really apply because obviously Chris isn't there, and he's not going to be playing for this team, at least at this moment, but I don't know. I mean, I don't know how this ends. This has gone on longer than a lot of people thought going into this, and he still has the last year of his deal this year. So him playing this year and then getting a ton of money as a free agent with somebody else always seemed like it was in the cards. But to this point, that's not something he's agreed to or wanted to be a part of. So the numbers have been reported out there. I think kind of one of the sticking points is the Aaron Donald deal with the Rams, where the Rams agreed to basically rip up his current contract and start from scratch with an extension. It seems like Chris Jones's camp wants that to happen, whereas the Chiefs are coming at it from a standpoint of, okay, you're under contract for $19.5 million base this year. Let's figure out the new money from here on out and see where we can land for those next 2 years. So it seems like a difference of opinion in that particular way. If you look at new money, it would be Chris Jones getting about $27.5 million a year for the next 2 years. If you're looking at ripping up the new contract, it'd be more like him getting $31.5 million, which would be a whole lot of money, even more than Aaron Donald, for the next 2 years. So I think that's kind of where the two sides are at. And like I said, Chris Jones didn't seem too concerned today with continuing to hold out. So we'll see if he does and if these two sides can come closer. But right now, there's no indication that that's going to happen.
Jesse Newell, Kansas City Star. All right, so let's bring this back to the football, what we're going to see tomorrow. If we're rolling with the assumption that Kelce does not play, who gets the share of the targets? What does his workload look like for the wide receiver room?
Yeah, I mean, we can obviously mention Noah Gray, who is the backup tight end. He should get more work, especially with as many tight ends the Chiefs like to use. He's still just 24, kind of coming into his own. Matt Nagy, the offensive coordinator for the Chiefs, talked about him having a great camp, you know, in the last month when they went to St. Joseph. So look for him. But I would say the one to circle is Sky Moore, guys. I talked to him in the locker room earlier this week, and he anticipates to have the Juju Smith-Schuster role for this offense, which is the intermediate route. Being able to go over the middle, be a reliable zone target for Patrick Mahomes when he's in there and needing kind of a safety valve. And they love what he's done this summer. He's had one of the best camps of anybody out there. He was with Mahomes during the summer, working out with him, learning more what he wants. And last year what kept him from playing well was the knowledge of the offense. They tried to make him learn all three wide receiver positions, and it just became too much mentally. He's in a much better headspace now. So if he stays healthy, I've been on the record saying 900-plus yards for Sky Moore this year, but he could be a big beneficiary if Travis Kelce is out. And even if he's not, I think if he does take that Juju role in this offense, we know Juju last year was the number one receiver. If we don't count Kelce, he had 933 yards. Sky Moore's numbers could look similar to that, and he could have a much bigger year than he had a season ago.
Don't worry. Juju's agents are saying the same thing. He was the number one receiver. But, Jesse, when you look at this team, how would you compare them to the three previous Super Bowl teams? The same, slightly better, slightly worse?
Well, it's sort of tough right now because it's kind of incomplete. I mean, I would say if everybody was here and everybody was healthy and everybody was reported that they would put themselves in the game again. I mean, they were not – you know, this is how it happens, and Andy Reid will be the first to admit this. You put yourself in the game, and then you hope things go well for you. Like, the Chiefs were an underdog in the Super Bowl last year, but they had Patrick Mahomes played great, and they made plays down the stretch, and things went their way. This team, they played a bunch of rookies last year, especially in the secondary. You would think they would all be a year better. If you added that to Chris Jones and, you know, Nick Bolton taking a step last year and some of the linebackers they had and some of the free agent signings, you really like them, along with Patrick Mahomes and what he does. And Travis Kelce, you know, still battling father time when it comes to when his natural age drop-off going to come. But, you know, I'd compare them favorably to last year if all those pieces were going right now. But that's kind of the question about week one, is that Travis Kelce's probably not in there. Chris Jones is definitely not in there, and he takes so much pressure off of so many other defensive teammates. So at this particular moment, they're probably not there. But, you know, you look at the AFC, there's so many other contenders. You look at the Chiefs, even last year when I talked about the Eagles were the favorites in the Super Bowl, I think they put themselves in the game. They put themselves in the game, and there's a good reason that they are one of the, if not the Super Bowl favorite this year. It's just a little bit murky right now because you're not exactly sure when Chris Jones is going to show up, and when he does show up, if he's going to be full strength and ready to go out there and perform at his highest level like he did for the Chiefs last year.
So if we look at matchups, and when we look forward to tomorrow, one of the things that I think the Lions can kind of circle as one of the advantages they'll have, especially with Jones' absence, is that offensive line. There was news, by the way, that Ragnow did not appear at practice yesterday. It turns out maybe it was rest. But how do you look at this defensive line without Jones matching up with what could be one of the better offensive lines, especially from a run-blocking standpoint?
Yeah, it's not good for the Chiefs. I mean, they honestly they didn't do much to address it either, other than signing Charles Omenihu from the 49ers. And by all indications, they figured he was going to have a suspension at some point in the season, but they didn't figure a 6-game suspension, which is what the NFL landed on with the personal conduct policy. So the Chiefs are thin there. And, you know, we talk about in the training camp where nobody's ever a loser and everybody's, you know, doing great, but we would ask frequently, Andy Reid, Steve Spagnuolo, like, who's stepping up on the defensive line without Chris Jones in there? And those guys weren't coming up with many answers. So the Chiefs just traded for Neil Farrell out there in Vegas. You know, he came along, and I asked Andy Reid earlier this week if he was going to play on Thursday, even though he's only been here a week, and he didn't rule it out. So they've been searching for bodies. They've been searching for production. I think this is a Steve Spagnuolo game, guys. I mean, I think he's going to have to get creative. I think they might put Leo Chanel, their third-round linebacker, a run stopper in there a bunch. He's kind of been developing over training camp. They could go 3-3-5. Look out for Shamari Connor, who's a super athletic freak when it comes to playing cornerback and safety, but they've been blitzing him off the edge a bunch. They love to blitz Le'Jarius Sneed off the side too. This is a manufactured pressure game for the Chiefs. I think what they're going to be looking to do is try to clog up the running lanes, get to third and long, and then let Steve Spagnuolo do his magic. And that's not the way they prefer it. They would love for Chris Jones to be here and just win his matchup, but outside of that, I think you rely on your coaches and hope that your guys come together as a team to play well defensively. And if that's the case, then they're going to rely on their defensive coordinator tomorrow. And I think the Chiefs are going to have to get pretty exotic to get some pressure on the Lions.
Jesse, I'm going to put you on the spot. Chiefs season win total is 11.5 or to win the division minus 165. Which one do you think is a little bit better bet?
Yeah, that's a tough one, especially with recent days. Yeah. You know, I would probably still go with the division winner. And it's just, I know last year the Chargers, for myself included, were getting a lot of love. It doesn't seem as likely just because of the way the Chiefs have dominated this division and dominated division foes. The 11.5 is a little bit trickier just because of the Kelce thing unknown, the Chris Jones thing unknown. I know that doesn't affect Vegas lines, Chris Jones in particular, as much as maybe some fans out there would think. Maybe it's a half point in the line, maybe on a game-to-game basis. But there's just a lot of unknowns for the Chiefs right now to make me feel too confident. I will say, though, if you look at Andy Reid's record over time on over-unders, especially with the Chiefs, I think he's gone over 9 of the last 10 years. So, I mean, his record is really good with that. It's just this is a point in the Chiefs season where things are a little bit more uncertain than they have been typically when you enter week one. So probably go with the division. Seems to me like the Chargers are the biggest challenger to that, and the other two are probably not unless Sean Payton completely pulls something out. But I would expect the Chiefs to win this division, even if things don't go as well for them in the regular season as they hope.
Jesse, we have about 10 seconds. The Rock Chalkers are winning the national title this year, right?
Hunter Dickinson's good. We will see. We'll see how it turns out.
Jesse Newell, Kansas City Star. Thanks for joining us, man. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
By the way, I want to follow up on a conversation. RDW checked in on Twitter because we're talking about Survivor and that, like, Kansas City was before everything one of my considerations. Yeah. Had a great point. Problem with using Kansas City week one and Survivor right now is that they're only the only clear play Christmas week. Yeah. You're going to want to save them.
That's why I'm saying I think it's tough to take them. I hadn't looked at that one right now off the top of my head, but he's absolutely right. That's why I don't think a ton of people will be on them. And is it really worth the risk in 1 week to have a re-entry on the Chiefs in that spot? I don't think it's worth burning.
That's why I like talking to smart guys like you, man. And RDW, thanks for checking in. Although, Dustin doesn't like tweets, so don't send them because he does not appreciate them. No, we're up against it. Sorry, you can't respond. We'll come back here at Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Best Thursday of the year is coming up, folks. All about the National Football League's opening night, and football is back. DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, is hooking new customers up with a can't-miss offer to celebrate. Place your first $5 NFL bet and score $200 in bonus bets instantly. Don't wait to kick off to get in on the hype. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use code SHARP. New customers get $200 in bonus bets instantly when you bet just $5. It's code SHARP only on DraftKings Sportsbook. The crown is yours. We are back here live at the D Las Vegas. JVT, Amal Shah, and Dustin Swedelson, after about a 45-minute break, is back.
Where'd you go for lunch?
I finally caught my breath. It was a long walk this morning.
I figured you went somewhere for lunch.
I will say yesterday you made a beeline for the bathroom and you got in tight. And I was like, oh boy. Because I've been there before when doing like local stuff. Over at Thomas and Mack, you got to walk up the steps to get up there. And so when you get to the set, when you're cutting it close in the first segment, you're like, yeah.
Well, I mean, you know the radio trick. Like, hey, can we stack the commercial with breaks?
Sure.
Can we play Stairway to Heaven?
Yep.
Like, you never know what we got going on in the bathroom.
I got one of the best radio quitting stories of all time. There was a guy that worked at this small station in Texas, and he didn't get along with the program director. And he plays his
song. You were probably friends with him, right?
He was a mall.
No, mine would be way more epic. He goes to the program director up, and it's like the middle of the night, and he goes, this song is 4 minutes and 8 seconds. You have that much time before you have dead air. Bye.
Oh, man, he could have hooked him up with, like, Inagata DeVita.
Yeah.
No. He's lucky he didn't play Jim Croce and wasn't 2 minutes.
I was going to say, yeah, I would hook up with, like, the 90 seconds thing and just be like, all right, guys, I'm out. See you later. All right, so what do we got? What are we calling this? I'm sorry.
It's a 3-point stance. Go over the top three news stories in the National Football League. So we'll begin first some news you touched on earlier. We didn't have time to dissect it. Nick Bosa gets a 5-year, $170 million extension from the 49ers today. $122.5 million guaranteed. He is now the highest paid defensive player in the NFL. How shocked are you that this deal got done?
Not at all.
Yeah, I mean,
you know what I like is Lynch being the GM there, JVT. He understands a player of this caliber doesn't need to be in camp. I think the holdout and like the agent and the organization are working in conjunction. Like, look, we just want you to continue to work out. They know he does. Be ready in week one. That's it.
Yep. I will say, I am wondering, you say get ready for week one. Does that mean there's a snap count thing? Like, how prepared are you? You know, part of the thing when you talk to guys is training camp is getting used to getting battered and bruised and whatnot.
Yeah.
So you do wonder maybe there's something there. But I would assume cardio-wise and physicality-wise, he's ready to go.
Yeah, the Bosa seem like they're always game ready. I feel like you could
exactly.
You could call them in April, and they're like, yeah, I'm ready to go. Just give me a week.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, they're a different kind of specimen. So, yeah, no shock there. And I think Amal's right. I think it benefits all parties.
Yeah.
Hold out. Don't get hurt. Let's get the deal done, show up week one, and play. That's why the Chris Jones thing, it's like, all right, we got to make some moves here because games are actually happening. Next one, this came down a few minutes ago. Cooper Kupp out versus Seattle for the Rams. Sean McVay, speaking to reporters today, did not rule out putting Kupp on the injured reserve list. That would then leave him out of the first four games of the season for Los Angeles.
Yeah. This has been my problem with L.A. I think we've talked about this. My thought for the Rams was early season play on team because as long as they're healthy,
right,
they're going to be better than the market thinks they are. But you're very top heavy, and then when you start to lose your big three, which is Donald, Kupp, and Stafford, then you start to get dangerous territory, and now we're already in dangerous territory. So what I'm curious about, where does this number go? We're at 5.5 now. It's kind of a dead number. No Cooper Kupp. You wonder if the market starts to get a little randy and push this thing back up because I will say this, much like we do with all these games and all, you get to a certain point where you're telling me like 6.5-ish or something like that, I'd be tempted to still come in on the Los Angeles Rams even without Cooper Kupp.
I just can't back this team right now, but I don't think it's a bad play. I don't think Seattle's a team that should be laying nearly a touchdown to anyone, even though a lot of people have high expectations for them this year. You know, to me, what's going to be interesting this year to pay attention to is the situation with Aaron Donald because he's got a potential out after 2024, and does he look to potentially exercise that, or does he even choose to retire? Because I think the losing is going to get frustrating for him.
Go ahead.
Real quick, you just said something about your like betting, like looking at the numbers, seeing that it's 5. Do you find in the NFL, because this is what I find when I look at a lot of these spreads, is I'll go, yeah, I feel like that is a good number to bet, but I don't love it enough to actually place the bet. In the NFL, I find that happens more than any other sport, where I look at the line, I go, yes, to me, the Rams at +5, I don't think it's a bad bet, but I just can't pull the trigger on it.
You know, I was just thinking when you said that, guys, I would say yes, but the NBA is not that far behind.
He'll probably disagree. But I'll look at NBA spreads and totals. They might as well be hieroglyphics. They make no sense to me.
Well, I mean, with that really quickly, and you've kind of alluded to this with college
and
football.
And in the NBA betting guide that comes out.
Right, that's true. No, but you alluded to this with college football. In the NBA, I'd be willing to like be behind a point or two because of the volatility. So like it's not as hyper focused on the number.
No, for me it's not about the volatility. Yeah. It's the fear, right?
Sure.
Like I'm like, I want to take this team. I'm more of a situational guy in the NBA. Teams on a 3-game losing streak. They've got a good opportunity against a team on a back to back or something like that. We're here in the NFL with the numbers. You're absolutely right. I think the NFL, if you looked and asked the average person, they probably look at 10 games when they start out on a Sunday or getting ready for the Sunday, and then they pare it down to about 3-4 games, and they were like, kind of on a coin toss on one of those games, don't like the number. And then all of a sudden that team, like the Seahawks, wins by 17. And they're like, oh, I should have taken it, or the Rams win outright or something like that.
Well, as Jimmy Vaccaro would always say, right, you know, when you're in line, the sharp bettors will get out of line when it moves by a half point. The rest will just stay. It doesn't really matter that much. Can I also point out, too, about this, without Cooper Kupp, one thing that goes against me here is now all of a sudden your wide receiver room does take kind of a little bit of a step back. And those are pretty – it's a pretty good
second. Atwell now the number one?
Right. And so when you're looking at those corners for the Seattle Seahawks, which are pretty solid, now all of a sudden you're looking around and going, all right, now who's getting open here? And that's part of the question.
Yeah, it's difficult with the Rams. Like you said, you can't back them when they lose any of their guys because their salary is their salary cap is tied up over the course of like four guys.
Yep.
Van Jefferson, Tutu Atwell, DeMarcus Robinson on the depth chart, Puka Nacua out of BYU, who I liked a lot for the Cougars, but college and NFL are two different sports.
If that was like the third team All-American team in college,
exactly,
it's solid.
Right, exactly.
All right, next story here, speaking of receivers, Terry McLaurin. He and Chase Young for Washington practiced in full pads today, but they were listed as limited. McLaurin said he's not feeling any limitations with his injured toe, and his plan is to play on Sunday. That is a big popular pick among people looking at survivor entries. You've got the Commanders laying 7 at home against the Cardinals.
I want to go first on this one because I tend to agree with what JVT said about Sam Howell, which is he doesn't think he's necessarily that good. And I think the Commanders could wind up in a tighter game than most people bargained for in this one. I think at the end of the day, though, their defense guys ends up winning this game. I can tell you right now, for me, JBT, I would take the +7 with Arizona before I lay it with Washington.
Yes. No, I would completely agree. And I can't wrap my head around it. And it's weird because we take – I like how, like, the collective we take small sample sizes and in different fashions. So, for example, there's a lot of people you'll talk to and will go, oh, Jordan Love last year, he got in at the end of that Eagles game and the sample size wasn't big enough. I don't buy it. But that game against the Cowboys, Sam Howell showed me something. And I'm like, I don't understand what he showed you. He invites pressure, doesn't get rid of the football on time. I think there's something there with turnover where he plays as well. We'll see if that's going to be the case. So I could just foresee a scenario. If I've got a survivor entry and I need a last-minute drive from Sam Howell to win that game against the Cardinals, I could just see that coming into reality. Week one is insane.
Yeah.
Why is he raining on my week one pick?
I'm just saying.
No, because I'm scared now that scenario is going to exactly play out, and I already know I got a loser.
I'll flip the scenario. Josh Dobbs is going to be in a position to drive them down and win the game, and he's not going to do it.
Yeah, but I'd rather have Josh Dobbs than Sam Howell.
But you bring up an interesting point. Doesn't it feel like a game where it's just going to be field goals? There's not going to be a lot of strong finish drives, especially once you get to the red zone. Look, Gannon is a weirdo, as we've seen from Amazon clips that have come out.
Did you have a fire in your belly when you were driving over
here? When you're on the bus?
Yeah.
When we're looking for guys who have fire in their belly. What a weirdo. But maybe he can coach defense. At the very least, you know that side of the ball should be somewhat prepared. On the other side, Washington's defense should be awesome. Both quarterbacks are going to be inept. Just feels like a game where there's going to be a lot of field goals.
This has got like a scoreigami, like 11-3 written all over it. You know what I'm saying? Or something like that. 11-4.
Wait, hold on a second. 38.5 is the total here. Under?
I mean, it's moved a lot already, but I wouldn't want to bet it over. Tell you that. Like, I don't want to be sitting there on Sunday. Again, we like logic and data and numbers. I don't want to be sitting there on Sunday with an over ticket and needing these two offenses to get me there.
No, I
don't.
I tell you what, here's a real problem in Arizona. If Josh Dobbs gets hurt or is ineffective, you're going to Clayton Toon?
And they are hyping Clayton Toon up in Arizona, the quotes about him, thinking that he's a guy.
But here's the thing. This is why, again, they have Kyler Murray, so we'll see if this happens. But you can still get the first overall pick. You flip it for assets. It's what the Texans did. It is, we are going to roll Davis Mills out there for 17 games. And if he hits, hey, maybe we have something. If he doesn't, we might get the first overall pick.
I don't disagree with that move.
No, I would, but I'd be actually scared that maybe Clayton Toon looks good enough. No, he won't look good. Look good enough to not draft Caleb Williams because inevitably that's what's going to happen.
I mean, that's another question we can spend a whole segment on. Is it actually Caleb Williams, or are you just flipping it like the Chicago Bears did because you still have Kyler Murray, and that's going to be hard to flip with the contract?
That would be a mistake.
Well, that's the thing I always argue, but here's the problem. What JVT's point is an excellent one, which is you can't get rid of this deal. Your salary cap is going to be eaten for the next three to four
years. The only way you can do it, and I don't know how it would work, but remember the Brock Osweiler deal. He was dealt with a first-round pick. You have an extra first-round pick in Arizona. You take that extra first you got from Houston, you deal it with Murray and his contract, and that helps get him off the book somewhat.
They get Houston's pick. They get one, two. I'm going Caleb Williams, and I'm going Marvin Harrison
Jr. Let's stick on the Pacific Coast, and Nick Eliotti's going to join us next.